President Donald Trump's legal peril intensified Tuesday with a third criminal indictment. This time, he faces serious charges that include conspiracy to defraud the United States.
Since the attack on our Capitol, the Department of Justice has remained committed to ensuring accountability for those criminally responsible for what happened that day. This case is brought consistent with that commitment.
Plus, the crisis in Niger deepens as European nations work to evacuate their citizens over safety concerns.
Niger's borders have been closed to commercial flights since military officers ousted President Mohamed Bazoum last Wednesday.
And the use of artificial intelligence has become a focal point in the Hollywood strikes. Today is Wednesday, August 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning, I'm Lori London in Washington. A federal grand jury in Washington on Tuesday indicted former U.S. President Donald Trump, accusing him of illegally trying to upend his 2020 election loss to retain power. Justice Department Special Counsel Jack Smith, who filed the 45-page indictment, gave a brief statement on the charges after the grand jury heard months of testimony from some of Trump's closest allies and their recollections of how Trump tried and failed to overturn his loss to Joe Biden.
Today, an indictment was unsealed, charging Donald J. Trump with conspiring to defraud the United States, conspiring to disenfranchise voters, and conspiring and attempting to obstruct an official proceeding.
That official proceeding, the Electoral College vote count by Congress on January 6, 2021, as 2,000 Trump supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol in a rampaging protest.
The attack on our nation's capital on January 6, 2021, was an unprecedented assault on the seat of American democracy. As described in the indictment, it was fueled by lies. Lies by the defendant, targeted at obstructing a bedrock function of the U.S. government, the nation's process of collecting, counting, and certifying the results of the presidential election.
The latest charges add to Trump's legal peril as he campaigns to regain the White House in the 2024 election. It's the first time in the country's 247-year history that a former president has been accused of illegally trying to stay in office rather than peacefully turn over power to a successor. For analysis on these unprecedented charges, I spoke with criminal defense attorney and former CIA officer Jack Rice, starting with his reaction.
This is absolutely extraordinary, because we have seen multiple indictments, but this one, for the very first time, is the one that hits dead center of what the biggest concern of this case and of this presidency has been. Because it's really about how can a sitting president, using his governmental power, overturn the will of the people? And that's really what it's about. It's about his ability to actually stay in office when every other president in the history of the United States has acknowledged and accepted the will of the people, except this one. How far can a president go? That's extraordinary.
And the way this indictment is laid out, do you foresee potentially more charges coming? There were conspiracy to overturn the U.S. government, but no charges of inciting the violence that we saw on January 6th, which Jack Smith even said this whole investigation was the heart of the matter.
No question about that. If we think about how Jack Smith has approached this in general, he's approaching this conservatively. The idea of, can you make the direct connection between what President Trump did on January 6th and go directly to those net results on the steps of the Capitol? And that takes a couple of jumps. Whereas what we're talking about here is an indictment, four counts, by the way, talking about a couple of counts of obstruction, witness tampering, some more, that it's designed to say he himself did this thing. It's as if he were standing on the steps of the Capitol and he had done that. He would have been charged then. In this case, he's saying it's not steps away, it's actually him doing what he did.
And Jack Smith also said in his brief statement that the investigation is ongoing. It's continuing. It appears there were six unnamed co-conspirators. They were not indicted, though. Do you expect more charges
for either the former president or others in his circle?
I think it's possible we may see more charges. But again, Jack Smith is a conservative. And I mean that in the sense of how he approaches prosecuting the case. And so as a result, he certainly has the ability. But what I think he's trying to do is not water these indictments down. He's not trying to weaken the charges that he has by stretching too far, because that actually can cut against his ability to successfully prosecute. And I think he's thinking about that right now.
Overall, from what you've seen, how damning do you think these charges are?
It's damning. It's really specific. It's really intentional. It's really thought out. This has taken multiple years to get to this space. But when you realize that, and this was pretty clear through this 45-page indictment, we're talking about the president ignoring his own advisors. We're talking about the president ignoring his own allies, his own administrative officials, his own vice president, two U.S. attorneys general, justice officials, even the government election security chief, all of whom, by the way, he actually placed, he nominated them into office. All of them told him not to do what it was that he did, and he did it anyway. That is extraordinarily powerful when we talk about an indictment like this.
Jack Smith said he was seeking a speedy trial, and of course he is up against the clock with the presidential election coming and this former president looking to get back into the office again, where he could potentially pardon himself. What do you think the reaction will be from the former president to this?
An indictment would not stop the former president from becoming president if he won the election. However, a conviction would. In this particular case, I think that the former president is going to push and push this away as far as he can. In other words, he's going to delay, 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 because if he can win the presidency, he can start thinking about what he does next. What kind of power can he use with the pulpit of the presidency? Could he pardon himself? Could he do something else? These are all questions that we have. And remember, this is an 80-something-year-old man that by the time he finishes, if he were to win, the likelihood of him ever seeing a day in a prison cell is, well, remote.
Criminal defense attorney Jack Rice. In response to the latest indictment, Democratic leaders in Congress issued a statement noting, quote, the insurrection on January 6, 2021 was one of the saddest and most infamous days in American history. A statement from the Trump campaign said the former president always followed the law and the Constitution. He is expected to make his first court appearance in the case on Thursday. A high-rise building in Moscow that houses three Russian government ministries was struck by a drone Tuesday, the second time in 3 days, in what Russia called an attempted Ukrainian terrorist attack. A Ukrainian presidential advisor said Moscow should expect more drone attacks and more war. We hear now from Associated Press correspondent Karen Shamus.
The Russian Defense Ministry said that it has shot down two Ukrainian drones outside Moscow and jammed another. The jammed drone crashed into a skyscraper in the Moscow City Business District, the same building that was damaged in a similar attack a few days earlier. Russian officials have claimed that the intensified attacks on the capital region reflect failures in Ukraine's counteroffensive. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said over the weekend that the war is gradually coming back to Russian territory, but he stopped short of taking responsibility for the attacks. I'm Karen Shamas.
Nearly a week after a military junta seized power in Niger, the crisis appears to be deepening. From Reuters, Olivia Chan has the latest.
France plans to evacuate hundreds of French and European citizens from Niger over the next 24 hours. That's according to its foreign minister on Tuesday. It comes a day after neighbors Mali and Burkina Faso said on national broadcasters any outside intervention to restore the ousted government would be seen as a declaration of war. French Foreign Minister Catherine Colonna told LCI TV that France had spoken with authorities in Niger to make sure the evacuation could proceed safely, but stressed it in no way meant any recognition of the junta.
We estimate that a few hundred French people wish to leave and have expressed this intention. A few hundred Europeans too.
With the risk of conflict escalating, Spain said it was preparing to evacuate more than 70 citizens by air, and Italy said it would organize a repatriation flight. Germany also urged its citizens to join the French flights. European Commission spokesperson Nabila Masrali said the European Union is not planning to formally evacuate its staff from Niger.
And of course, we are following the situation. This means that the decision will be kept constantly under review.
Niger's borders have been closed to commercial flights since military officers ousted President Mohamed Bazoum last Wednesday in the seventh military takeover in less than 3 years in West and Central Africa. The coup has sent shockwaves across the Sahel region, where Niger's Western allies fear losing influence to Russia. Supporters of the junta burned French flags and attacked the French embassy in Niger's capital, Niamey, on Sunday, prompting police to fire tear gas in response. It has also raised security fears as groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda have been gaining ground in the area for years. West African regional bloc ECOWAS has imposed sanctions, including border closure, a halt in all financial transactions, and a national assets freeze. It said it could authorize force to reinstate Bazoum, who is still locked in his palace. The declaration by Mali and Burkina Faso on Monday night was the strongest indication yet of a new alliance forming in opposition to the rest of the 15-member state regional bloc.
As for United States citizens, U.S. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says there are no plans for now to evacuate Americans from Niger.
We don't have any indications of direct threats to U.S. citizens or to our facilities, and so we've not changed our posture with respect to our presence in Niger at this time. But again, we're monitoring it literally by the hour.
Bazoum's government was one of the West's last democratic partners against West African extremists. We're following these other stories from around the world. Myanmar's ruling military pardoned jailed former leader Aung San Suu Kyi on Tuesday on 5 of the 19 counts for which she was convicted. The pardons mean 6 years will be shaved off of Suu Kyi's 33-year jail term. At least 20 people were killed and 27 are still missing in floods surrounding China's capital, Beijing, with thousands of others evacuated to safety after days of heavy rains. And the fate of an American nurse and her daughter, kidnapped in Haiti last week, remains unknown as the U.S. State Department so far refused to say whether the abductors have made demands. Alex Dorsainville was working for a nonprofit Christian ministry when she and her daughter were seized Thursday. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A study from the University of Copenhagen warns that if the present level of greenhouse gas emissions continues, a major ocean current system will shut down any time between 2025 and 2095, much earlier than thought. According to NOAA, the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, or AMOC, is the oceanic current system that circulates water within the Atlantic Ocean by directing warm waters of the tropics to the far north and sending back Arctic cold water south. Scientists say that if the AMOC were to shut down, global climate and weather patterns would change dramatically. For example, parts of eastern North America and western Europe would experience colder winters, cooler summers, more extreme weather events, and a rise in sea levels. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. The fallout from the new law that limits the power of the Israeli judiciary is already being felt. Thousands of Israelis say they'll leave the country. Thousands of reservists say they'll no longer serve, and investors are losing faith in the Israeli economy. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
A new survey found that more than a quarter of all Israelis are considering leaving the country if the judicial overhaul continues. The day after the law was passed, a new WhatsApp group called Doctors for Relocation had already attracted 3,000 members. Chagai Levine is the chairman of the Association of Public Health Physicians.
So many Israelis, more than 1,000 physicians, now are starting to look for options for relocation for other countries. Others are planning to take an absence of leave or to get fired from their work.
Along with the doctors are the Army reservists, who have already begun to act on their threats to refuse volunteer reserve duty. The Israeli newspaper Haaretz reports that the helicopter pilot course has already been scaled back after nearly half of the reservist trainers stopped coming to teach. Amir Bar Shalom is the military analyst for Israel's Army Radio.
We know that with the Air Force, in about 30 days from now, we will have, let's say, less skilled pilots than we had before.
There are also economic consequences. Both credit rating agencies Moody's and Standard & Poor's have warned that investors are losing confidence in Israel. Yanai Spitzer is a professor of economics at Hebrew University.
The value of the shekel has depreciated 17% over and above what would have been predicted by normal market conditions. That is a lot. Moreover, we see that since the elections, the Israeli stock exchanges have been severely underperforming. This implies a loss of wealth on the order of 300 billion shekels, which is about $80 billion. And this is by the time that just one law has passed.
Many of the protest leaders come from Israel's high-tech sector, and analysts worry about a brain drain. Yossi Klein Halevi is a senior fellow at the Hartman Institute in Jerusalem.
Nothing worries me more than the prospect of an emigration of our best young people, the people who keep Israel modern, democratic, who connect Israel to the wider world, the global economy. These are the people that are the backbone of what we call here the startup nation, the Israeli success story.
A week after passing the first part of the judicial overhaul, the Israeli Knesset began its three-month summer vacation. But in September, the Israeli Supreme Court is set to hear petitions against the law that was passed. Netanyahu has refused to say whether he will obey the court if they rule that the law should be overturned. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
World Breastfeeding Week is now underway as child advocates work to promote mother's milk as the best way to get babies off to a healthy start. A World Health Organization and UNICEF report finds that exclusive breastfeeding could save the lives of more than 820,000 children under the age of five annually. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The UN health agencies report their message about the benefits of breastfeeding is getting across. Nina Chad is infant and young child feeding consultant for WHO. She tells VOA the benefits of breastfeeding are as important as breathing fresh air and eating nutritious food. She says the way babies start eating in life is important for keeping them healthy throughout their whole life.
Because it protects babies from infectious diseases in infancy that can be life-threatening, and it protects mothers from non-communicable diseases throughout their life course.
Chad says babies should be breastfed exclusively for the first 6 months of life. They then should be introduced to nutritious solids and continue to be breastfed up to 2 years of age or beyond. She says research shows such children are less likely to be overweight or obese, do better on intelligence tests, and earn a higher income in adult life. On the other hand, she says millions of children who are not breastfed are stunted, many are overweight or obese. She adds many are at risk of infectious diseases. Chad acknowledges breastfeeding can be challenging in areas of conflict and in emergency situations such as in Sudan or the Horn of Africa. But she says even under these difficult circumstances, it is easier to breastfeed than to formula feed a baby. She says it is much easier for mothers to breastfeed exclusively for the first critical 6 months of a baby's life. In marking World Breastfeeding Week, WHO and UNICEF say greater breastfeeding support in workplaces will boost global breastfeeding rates. They urge governments to ensure all mothers, even those who work in the informal sector, have access to at least 18 weeks of paid maternity leave. They call for new mothers to be given regular breaks so they can continue to breastfeed their children once they return to work. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The use of artificial intelligence has become a focal point in the Hollywood strikes. Studios say they have offered fair protections and compensation where the new technology is used, but actors and writers still fear their likeness or creative content will be used and manipulated without payment or their consent.
Xenia Dulow has this issue report. In the ongoing strike between Hollywood studios and the Writers and Screen Actors Guilds is artificial intelligence, or AI, the use of which has grown exponentially in TV and movie production over the past decade.
The idea that somebody could take that ownership of yourself away from you, like, that's just very frightening.
Had actually forced people to go in those rooms and get scanned, or else you don't get paid for the day.
Now AI can actually do art. If it doesn't frighten you, it should.
Bargaining for TV and movie studios, the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers says it agreed to fair compensation when a digital replica is made of a performer. But the Screen Actors Guild, or SAG-AFTRA, says AMPTP is offering background performers pay for one day of work in exchange for the rights to their digital likeness for the rest of eternity with no compensation. AMPTP denies that allegation. At the recent Comic-Con convention in San Diego, AI was a major topic of discussion. Tim Friedlander, the president of the National Association of Voice Actors, said because AI can easily replicate human voices, its members had been affected earlier than other industries.
One actor found their voice taken and used in a promo that they never did. And another one worked for a company for 3 years, and for the fourth year, the company did not rehire them because they said, we have 3 years of your voice, we're just going to create an AI synthetic voice.
American voice actress Cissy Jones says the most scary scenario for her, if her voice was digitized and programmed to say things that she doesn't agree with.
When it can be inflammatory content, whether it's racist, homophobic, NSFW, pornographic, right? Things that I would never say.
Duncan Crabtree Ireland, National Executive Director of SAG-AFTRA, which is leading strike negotiations, worries that actors could unknowingly give studios consent to use their images or voices.
This idea that you can just bury a sentence somewhere in a huge contract that says, I give you the rights to use my digital replica in perpetuity throughout the universe in any technology for any purpose, that's not good enough, especially when you are creating something new using that person's identity.
SAG-AFTRA negotiator and actor Zeke Elton says there should be laws that ensure performers give consent and are compensated.
So what it would ask for is that any content that comes out of an AI machine that is not a human person be marked as such. It's the very first step, so that when we're looking at advertising or when we're looking at art, we realize, is this a machine doing it or is this real human art?
When SAG went on strike in July, it joined Writers Guild of America members, whose contract expired in May, freezing production of scripted shows and ensuring that TV and film fans will have to turn to reruns for their entertainment fix. Jenny Adulu for VOA News, San Diego.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, we thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Be well and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 2014, Russia brazenly seized Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula. It was a violation of international law then and remains so today, declared Ambassador Jeffrey De Laurentiis, acting U.S. Deputy Representative to the United Nations. 9 years later, Russia has moved its armed forces deeper into Ukraine's territory, said Ambassador De Laurentiis.
Russia is using the same playbook in Ukraine as it did in 2014. It resorts to the same attempts to annex additional areas of Ukraine through sham referenda. It attempts to further subjugate the people living in those regions through passportization, the installation of Russian occupation authorities in regional governments, the conscription of Ukrainians into Russia's forces, and other illegitimate methods.
Since February last year, Russia has killed tens of thousands of Ukrainian men, women, and children. It has caused the displacement of millions of people from their homes and destroyed more than half of the country's energy grid. In areas under Russian occupation, Russia's forces have arrested and detained tens of thousands of Ukrainian civilians, many of whom have been subject to sexual violence or torture and held incommunicado. Indeed, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights recently presented his latest findings. He called them shocking, said Ambassador De Laurentiis. Among the many gruesome findings, there were several documented cases that suggested Russia's armed forces have used detained civilians as human shields. Russia's occupation of parts of Ukraine has also resulted in danger to surrounding nuclear plants and other critical infrastructure, noted Ambassador De Laurentiis.
Let's be clear. Russia's militarization of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, including Its military presence on top of reactor buildings jeopardizes global nuclear safety and security.
The effects of this war have been devastating, not only for the people of Ukraine, but also for people across the world, as energy and food prices have increased, said Ambassador De Laurentiis.
Russia's suspension of its participation from the Black Sea Grain Initiative was yet another selfish blow to the world's most vulnerable. We call on all member states to urge Russia to reverse its decision, resume negotiations, and to extend, expand, and fully implement this initiative.
Russia's war against Ukraine is a clear violation of the UN Charter, said Ambassador De Laurentiis. We once again call on Russia to withdraw its troops from Ukraine's sovereign territory and end this war.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.